Hi, everybody. It's Chris Evans again, recording another Storage Unpacked podcast. This week, as usual, I'm here with Martin. Hi, Martin.
Hi, Chris. How are you?
Pretty good. And this week with a special guest, Gina Minks from VMware. Hi, Gina.
Hey there. How are you doing?
Yeah, pretty good. And we've known each other, well, I think all three of us have known each other for quite a while. I think probably when you were doing the influencer relations initially, was that at Dell?
I think did we not meet each other when I was still at EMC?
Oh, it could even have been EMC. Yeah, of course.
I think I was at EMC doing the Proven Professional Community and when I was blogging when I worked at EMC back in the day.
So that's been a long time ago.
It's been a while.
I was going to say, I remember Gina as one of the original gang of the EMC bloggers way back.
Yep. That's where I started with social media. I was developing training classes. I was doing the SAN classes. And then when they went on their software tear, I got all of those new software classes to develop. But at the same time, I was getting more and more into social media. I was one of the first 12 or so bloggers helped create the social media standards inside EMC. And that's why Dell recruited me away.
EMC had standards.
Oh, yeah. Marketing always has lots of standards, trust me.
Good. Wonderful. And that was a great introduction that you did for everybody, which is really helpful. I'll ask you in a second what you do now with VMware. You can tell everybody in a second. But obviously, you've just given us a bit of an introduction as to what we're going to talk about today. And it's that whole marketing, ethics, reputation side of things of storage and how you sell to people. So within VMware, though, what are you focused on at the moment?
So I work in the Cloud Platform Business Unit, which is the product group that develops vSphere and VMware Cloud on AWS. But I'm totally focused on Dell and helping them with whatever they need to sell vSphere.
Excellent. So does that mean you can get us free accounts on VMware on AWS? Does that work?
Probably not free, but I might be able to help get you an evaluation account. I have to ask. I'm not sure what they're doing.
I'd love to think about that one for another day. So the reason we thought it'd be great to have this conversation is because you'd written a blog post about reputation on your 24/7 IT connection or 24x7 IT connection, however you want to pronounce it. Would you like to just give everybody a bit of background as to what that reputation blog post was talking about and sort of set the scene for us?
So this is about there's so much use of social media and talking about brands in our space, technology and infrastructure technology in particular. And sometimes people will they will blog or tweet or otherwise podcast the most negative things about their competition or about different products or whatever. And it's interesting to watch that sometimes the smaller companies actually reward that as being this really aggressive sales tactic mentality. To just go after, whether it's true or not, just go really, really negative. So that was kind of the genesis of the blog post was, is that the right way to do things? Because I know that some of the blog posts I've written out of frustration that could have been taken as negative, I try to keep it not pointed at people or specific things. They get the most traction because people, it resonates with people and they have a strong opinion about it. But is it okay just to go negative to get eyeballs on your page and to get people to talk to you about whatever you're trying to say, just to go totally annihilate the competitor in a special space? I don't think it is, but some people think that's just a really aggressive sales tactic and it's okay.
Yeah, so some of the things that we see typically, and I think you can chime in a second, Martin, because in the time we've both been blogging, we've seen it, I guess, a lot. And you definitely see that going negative by actually being very personal to other people, maybe just picking on the company particularly, or as you said, just going for eyeball clicks. And I've done that myself. I know that I've done one or two posts which I could look at, which were like that. But I'm sure you'd agree, Martin, if you look back over, the last 10 years or so, we've seen quite a lot of that.
Oh, yeah, we do. We've seen it. And I think it's an interesting, there's a difference between myself and yourself, Chris, that we're very much independent. So I think we're not necessarily as going negative on competitors. I think it's very interesting when we see people go negative on competitors. I've always said to people, if you start being negative about a competitor, whether it's online or even on a face-to-face presentation or anything like that, my first thing is, I better go and have a look at that competitor because you've got something to say about them and you're a bit worried about them. Mm. So from my point of view, if a company goes negative about a competitor, that piques my interest.
That's a fair point. I mean, Gina, you think about that, you're almost like giving the competition a bit of an opportunity because you're deliberately talking about them.
I think so too. And I guess I don't know where that line is because I think when we started blogging, gosh, I guess it's been like 12 years, right? Like when I started blogging 12, 14 years ago, we did it to just get information out. And we did it because when we started blogging, it was hard to find information that wasn't completely controlled and curated by the overall marketing teams. And they would take so long to get changes out to people that that's why we were using the blog post, was to get the information out to people. And it's not like that anymore. I mean, it's to the point now where anybody can blog. It used to be harder to put pictures up. Like, we didn't have all of the different things that make it super easy now. So now anybody can create content. And because of that, there's so much content. So I don't know. I mean, I worry that maybe somebody takes what they see that gets a big SEO push. So it's something that's in your stream all the time. Do they consider that to be, it's real and it's true just because I see so much of it?
Yeah, it's a fair point. And I, looking back, by the way, just on that point, I think I wrote the first stuff I wrote about 2002, and I wrote it on a website that I had to do editing of the HTML by hand, and it looked awful. And a lot of the writing, to be honest, was awful. But, you know, you hope over time it does get better. But you're right, you do see that where if something's out there enough, perhaps people take it for real, and so many people are blogging about so many different things.
Right, it's what happened with our elections, right? So happens with everything. We're overwhelmed with information. So what you focus on and say, yeah, I think that's right? Is it the thing that you see over and over again? Is it the thing that's super, super controversial? So, oh my God, it must be true. It's kind of dangerous playing with information like this, you know?
When we started blogging, Twitter and social media probably wasn't anywhere near the size it is now. So now we also have the immediacy. Any corporate's employees these days can throw stuff up, and they don't necessarily think about the reputation of their employer, even though it's drilled into you if you work for any corporate. Mm-hmm. And so we have so much, and people can just type things. They can be angry or frustrated, and it can just explode very quickly.
There's a double-edged sword on that one, right? Because remember back in the day, the epic twit pisses that people would get into? Just the epic arguments between the vendors. And they knew better, and they went with it because they could. And I think you're right. Everybody from big corporations gets it drilled into them what to say and what not to say, which is why we get one or two messages from, you know, that we see those over and over and over again in the different social spaces. So when you see something that's a little edgy and different, maybe it's from a startup or someplace else, you tend to, that catches your eyeball because it's so different.
So that's a definition I guess I haven't heard for a while, twit piss, in case anybody doesn't really know what that means. We used to have pretty, I guess, virulent arguments back and forth on Twitter when it first started. But that does seem to have calmed down a lot, thankfully. So let's have a chat about what people should be doing in 2018 and what some of the things are that actually vendors use, techniques they use. I'm really interested in the one about, and I don't want to put you on the spot here because I know you work for VMware, and VMware have a lot of what you might call independent bloggers. But a lot of companies have chosen to take on board people who were very successful in blogging, and they haven't transformed them into corporate bloggers in the sense that they blog under a URL that belongs to the company. But clearly they might be employed by the company and writing on their own blog in effectively what must be company time. Now, I'm not sure that, do you think that's deceitful? Do you think that's just using those people's skills? And do you think that has an influence on the way that people see that represented in the market?
That was a lot of questions. So you're talking about, just to be clear, you're talking about people that might have been blogging and independent on their own, and then they get hired by a company like VMware?
That's right. And then they still carry on with their own blog. They may do some things on the corporate blog domain, but they still run their own blog. And you know, in general, they're still well ahead of things like press releases because they're working in that area. And therefore, they're able to write to it. Now, I don't want to pick on any particular person, but let's just pick on somebody because I have to. Let's pick on Chad. Because I bumped into Chad on the flight the other day. So it was, you know, we had a bit of a conversation and he's fresh in my mind. So he still writes his blog independently, yet obviously he had an insight into product releases and so on that would come out. And then he'd write about them on his blog as soon as they were announced. So there was a lot of sort of coordination there. Is that, you know, just the fact of the way things work, or is that something we should be concerned about?
I don't know if we should be concerned about it. And I'll give you as much of an inside view as I can, right? So, I mean, if you notice what I write on Teresa Miller's blog, that I blog my technical things on, because most of my personal blog is just ranty anymore, I write about work and I write about the stuff I'm working on. And it's not under the blogs@vmware.com. I tend to write about events on blogs@vmware.com. I just posted a post today. I don't think it's a bad thing as long as people disclose who they are and what they're doing. And it's a kind of a it's an interesting thing to look at, right? Because I do consider myself a blogger, and I hate that I don't have enough time to write for myself and write blog posts on my own. And I really don't, because I write so much for my job. It's one of the reasons I got hired. And maybe one of the reasons is because I do blog and I write well because I practice so much. And I think other technologists feel the same way. Because if they get hired to come and work for a company, they're writing stuff that may not have their name attached to it, right? Like all the SAN classes I wrote and the Voyance classes and all the other classes I wrote, they don't have my name attached to them, but I did all the writing. Yeah. So I think it's a way for people to keep their own presence up and their own blogging going, which is really difficult if you lose that channel because you're so busy channeling it into work. And they do write a lot that you may not see and may not realize that's what it is. So my opinion is it's almost a personal like attachment thing. Like this is part of who I am. I want to keep blogging, but I work for this company. I think as long as people are crystal clear that they are employees of the company, that would be number one. And then for people who are blogging, the other thing would be to be crystal clear when you can and cannot say things, because we do all know, you know, like the timelines of the products for the next year or two. So I think it's a good thing for the industry as well, because you still have, you don't want to lose that passion that that person has for writing and sharing information just because they've now got this extra layer of process that they have to follow so that they can get their paycheck every 2 weeks.
Yeah. And I get that in that sense. I guess you probably hit on the bit that's probably more important, and that's the transparency side of things. You know, actually saying you do work for that vendor and therefore, you know, you may have the right to early information or stuff like that. But I guess maybe as long as it's done under that sort of level of disclosure, maybe that's okay.
Yeah, I think you have to. And I think if you are, I think in most cases, people who are working for a vendor know that, and they know that if you aren't careful, the brand police will come for you and shut you down. So you have to be careful to, you know, make sure you disclose and make sure you don't disclose information before it's time to disclose it.
And we saw that a few times. I mean, there has been some amusing things in the past where things got pre-announced when they should have been pre-announced. Yeah, I think that's true. And I've always liked the fact that there's certainly the old school EMC bloggers that those in the past were always very open about that they worked for EMC. So there wasn't any deceit involved. I think as long as people are open that they are employed by a vendor, I have no problem with anybody, even if they're still writing an independent blog, as long as I know there may be a context.
Yeah, because I mean, that's for sure. If you're writing your own blog, but you're employed by a company and that's the technology you're writing about, you have to have that lens because you want to get paid. Whether you're doing it consciously or not, you're not going to say anything you shouldn't say. And you'll probably say things against other companies that are the kind of like the just the atmosphere you're breathing. That's how it's going to be. That's just why you have to disclose.
And you added a good point there. It's unlikely that those people are going to say anything positive potentially about their competitors because they don't want to be seen to be promoting the competition. So I guess you just have to take their comments in light of, you know, who their employer is in that instance.
I think the other thing is and this kills me. And when I find like a good blog or a good podcast to follow, I'm so happy because people don't realize sometimes how much information comes from these blog posts and how valuable they are. And thankfully they fly under the radar of a lot of people in corporate marketing, and we're able to get this real information out to the masses. So if you find a blog that you really like or a podcast, make sure you follow it and you let the people know it's awesome.
So that's a good point. So let's move on and talk about that then. A lot of people now, instead of being called bloggers, a lot of people get called influencers, which some people like the term, some people hate it. But a lot of people who were bloggers, who were writing online and who were doing, I guess, the marketing companies a favor by talking about their products, are now classed as influencers and get engaged by those companies to come to events. And Stephen, who was on last week, has obviously made an entire business out of doing that. Now, a lot of companies will get people to events. So next week, you're busy. In fact, depending on when this comes out, either next week you'll be doing Dell EMC Technologies VMware World or It will be over, and it depends on when I get around to publishing. But obviously lots of people have been invited to that and we're coming along, and they'll be there as influencers. Now, that is yet another angle of trying to expose, I guess, your reputation to the market to say, we want you to come and see exactly what we're doing and we want you to embrace it. And we don't want to hide anything. We want to show what we're doing.
Yeah. And that's I don't like that word influencers. I really hate it. I was rolling my eyes when you said it. It's not as easy as it seems to be to get that to happen. Number one, it's really hard to buy that buy-in internally because a lot of times that budget comes from either marketing or sales. And they're usually so, in my experience, looking at quarter to quarter results that they can't see how paying to bring somebody to a very expensive conference and, you know, pay for everything that they do just to get a few blog posts, how that's valuable. Sometimes I've had a really hard time even getting the buy-in to get on to Tech Field Day, which I think is incredible ROI. But it's very hard to convince the people that hold the budget sometimes to do it. And I will say, just from having done it, there's almost like a sanity check we need to do on ourselves, because sometimes these folks that get pegged as influencers, they kind of make a career of going from show to show to show and can be quite demanding and sometimes unreasonable in requests and things that they expect just because they're writing blog posts for a company.
And Martin is an example of that.
Yeah.
Really?
Really?
I'm not demanding.
Bacon rolls, Martin. Bacon rolls.
Oh, famous bacon rolls and then the donuts. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, bacon rolls and donuts. That is very demanding, and Fred will attest to that. Yes, you are right. There are people who will turn up to events and seem to be everywhere. And actually, sometimes you see that and you think they don't even seem to write that much. So you wonder what the value is of having them at the event. But I'm just wondering if, in terms of reputation, whether vendors now see that as an important thing to do, to have that sort of like... That sort of influencer event at their event, you know, almost like to add a little bit of sort of coolness to the whole event itself.
For my BU, we don't do that. We do like pre-blogger briefings and that kind of thing. The other thing we do that I do think is valuable, but it's a little bit of a twist on it. A colleague on my team, whose name is Don Sullivan, he runs, I don't remember what he calls them. He doesn't call them expert programs, of course, because of the expert program. But he runs specific kind of influencer groups based on really big workloads. So Oracle, SAP, HANA, that kind of thing. We just started one for HPC and big data, but people who are just real experts in the field. And when they write stuff, it's basically their blog posts look like white paper, but lots of hands-on. They're the ones that are either the customers implementing something amazingly cool, or they're the ones that are helping customers do really interesting things with the technology. And he, every year before the VMworld, runs half-day boot camps, you know, with these people that lead, you know, you can go and sign up for them and just lead you through this really in-depth technical conversation. That helps us inform, you know, either kind of check the boxes like, yeah, we're doing the right things with the product direction, or it helps us change the product direction. And we do, before VMworld, he always runs half-day boot camps with these guys and ladies lead these discussions because of their expertise. For me, you know, especially as a product person, that's way more valuable than just getting somebody to write interesting things about a new product launch, but actually having the experts when I need to go ask questions about, hey, I don't really understand machine learning. Tell me about these things here. And is this, what is TensorFlow and how does that work? And have people who are implementing and have been for 10, 15 years, but now are learning to virtualize it. That's an interesting conversation. And for me, that's way worth the bang for the buck. And for the influencers, they get part of this really tight, unique group that get to help shape the product direction, which is pretty amazing.
So you moved on. I think we started at the very beginning talking about reputation, and now we're moving on to a slightly different angle, and we're talking more about credibility here, which it sounds to me like, from my perspective, if whenever I would talk to a company, I'd want to see some credibility around what they were offering. Martin, I'm sure you must have that discussion with people every day of the week in terms of credibility.
Oh, yeah. So credibility in our industry as well, because as you know, I'm in media and broadcasting. So trying to find people who actually have a credibility to talk about that side of the business, who aren't coming from a traditional background, from a corporate background. Or as Gina was saying, I was talking about HPC, big data. We're seeing more and more of these niches come to the fore. The vendors themselves are much more interested in some of these niches. There's money to be made out of the niches. So people are looking for people who are experts who can come and talk to it, both from an influencer point of view, but as Gina said, also come and talk to themselves about what they see is working. And I think that's where the value's been for some of the stuff I've done in the past was blogging as a user. I think that has been helpful. And it's been helpful for me as well. So I'd encourage anybody who is a user to get out there and blog. You find that you can generate a reputation and a good reputation pretty quickly as well.
Because I feel like that has been tarnished too, because you can get a reputation and you can be internet famous. And I think I'm not sure I'm okay with that piece of it, but having a good reputation where you are solid and you know your content and you collaborate with other people and you share that content and you kind of, those connections, for me, that's what's invaluable. So, you know, just being able to have a network on Twitter where I can throw a question out and I get people to respond to me or introduce me to someone that really knows the answer, that's really an incredible benefit of this as well.
What I've really enjoyed about Twitter, and especially yourself, Gina, is the authenticity. Gina's Gina on Twitter. So you get your technical side, but we get everything else you're interested in. I wonder if you can talk about whether that's helpful, whether you feel that the fact that you get to know people more as people, as opposed to just somebody who's writing white papers or just blogging stuff for their company, you get a better feel for the person.
I think that's valuable to me anyways, because it helps you, because it is social media, right? Because it's how we act as human beings in a social environment. And if I realize someone likes the same music that I do, even if they don't speak English, you know, or that we have some of the same common, or that maybe they just are interesting in something else that they post, that makes you want to connect to them and learn more and engage. And then when you have that two-way communication going over something that may not be about technology, when you do need to talk technology, that connection's made and it's easier to converse about the things that we work for.
Do you think we've lost a bit there, though, in terms of that social media side, especially with the way that things have changed from a corporate perspective, in that you mentioned very earlier on that companies tend to now have a very sort of controlled marketing line when they talk about things. Do you think we've lost a certain degree of that that friendliness and that openness between people, simply because there's a line that has to be towed to make sure we don't tarnish the reputation?
Probably. I mean, there's been things that's happened to me that have reminded me that more people read what I write than I realize. And it's super frightening, and getting doxxed is never fun. So I'll just throw that out there. And I think it does, for me, it's always been, this is how I would act if I went to a conference and there were people around me, and this is who I am. And I think that we fought really hard when we brought social media out. That's one of the things that myself and Mark Brown, who ran the support community at the time, and of course went on to build up and take on the EMC Elect, we fought really, really hard to have reality in the rules that EMC put out there. But the brand people, they tend to squash a lot of stuff. So you're probably right. There's probably people who won't deal with it because they don't want to get in trouble, or they don't want the hassle of it. And there's probably people like me that skate way too close to the edge. And we'll see what happens in the future. I'm always thinking at sometime I'm going to get in trouble for things I say. But
you get away with it so far. So how would you measure the results of good and bad reputation, and whether that marketing stance is working out as a success? Do you know if people use tools? Is there a way to actually measure it?
Tools are kind of an interesting thing, right? Because, and I haven't used this in a long time, because this is why I get, anytime they pull me too close to PR and marketing, I back up. So I'm a product marketer. So I get to stay closer to the technology and the product, and for a reason I do that. But there are tools that they can measure, but it's based on setting levels of what is negative and what is positive. So and the big companies look at that all the time, like what is the sentiment around a certain product, and what is the sentiment around, this person is an influencer, like what kind of thing do they talk about, are they dangerous or not? And I've found that those tools are never foolproof, because there's so much idiosyncrasy in especially how techies communicate with each other, that unless you're a techie, you can't pick up if it's positive or negative, because generally we're pretty negative anyways, the language that we use. So there are tools that they use, but it's always better if you have somebody that understands the technology that's kind of guiding them through what they set up and they don't. It doesn't always happen though.
And if you're British, then we confuse things completely, because when something's really good, we'll say it's not bad. So there you go. Even if you're measuring on keywords, then British English would throw, or just English English, would throw things out completely, wouldn't it?
And you think about the kids. I mean, there's so many things that they say that it's totally, from an English language perspective, means really horrible, but they mean really, really good. And then everybody adopts. I can't think of anything particularly, but...
Well, something that's sick is not sick.
Yes, exactly. You say damn, and that should be a bad thing, but no, it's always a good thing.
Yeah. Martin, you're down with the kids. You must know these keywords.
No, I don't know any of these keywords. Like that. I'm not down with the kids. I'm old like you, Chris.
I don't think we're going to talk about being old, are we?
No.
No, we promise we wouldn't. So bearing in mind we're a storage podcast, we should be focusing a little bit on storage. One of the things that really interests me in the market, the way that things have gone is, and this is necessarily doesn't have to necessarily be done from a reputation perspective, but we've seen a lot of the storage companies, in order to be successful, they've had to go big. I think Stephen mentioned Pure Storage last week, and they're a fairly obvious one. Do you think companies have to go big like that now on their story, on their messaging? I mean,
I think it's all about the story. I'm not sure people get the story right because it gets so sanitized. And I will probably get in trouble for saying this, but I'm going to say it. I feel like there's a story for us to tell as product marketers and marketers. If we can tell a big story, especially right now, because everything is converging, all of the technologies, there's this huge change that's happening, right? What is that story to people who are stuck in a data center? What is that story about, you know, how things are changing and how my product can help you help your company change with the times and make lots of money? You know, so how do you tell that story in such a way that somebody who's sitting in a data center, who's an influencer on what's going to be purchased, says, oh my God, I can see that in my data center and that will totally change my life. We've got to go talk to these people. That's what a really good marketing big story does. And if you get that right, yeah, that's what you're supposed to do as marketers. Get that right, get that story right. And then you plug in with all of these people you may have hired that were blogging. You plug in these really strong technical proof points of, yeah, we can totally do this. And here's how we do it. That's what to me, the marketing nirvana would be. What is that beautiful story that makes sense? And maybe this is where we see ourselves going in 5 years. And you know, this is all changing in 5 years. If you're working in a data center, come on this journey with us. We'll help. We'll take you there. So I think that's the goal that everybody has with marketing. And yeah, it should be big. I think the problem is those stories resonate with the people who have to implement these and who need to make a decision on whether to purchase this or not. And that's always the hard part of it.
I don't recall that big story being told recently. I think there's been some losing of the way. I think at one point we did have quite a lot of really good storytellers. They seem not to be telling those stories, or they seem to be, maybe they're out of stories now. So some ways I think we need the next generation of storytellers to come through.
That's an interesting way to look at it, isn't it? Because a lot of the original bloggers, perhaps some of them who were very good at storytelling, got acquired by companies and have moved on. Maybe there is that next wave due to come through.
I hope so, because I think we need it, and something we struggle with. I struggle with all the time because, you know, being able to see what's coming and what we have and how awesome it is. How do we tell that story? And it's something we're working on, but that's we do need new storytellers for sure.
So Gina, just summarizing what you said there, obviously you touched on that point about needing good storytellers and getting people enthused about it. But what else can we really see? I think on top of that, we're definitely saying that we should definitely put the negativity to bed. And that sounds like a good message for everybody to pick up on and try and focus on going forward, that it should be about the product and the customer and where we want to take people, and not on that going negative against each other.
Yeah, definitely. I think the other thing is if you want to blog, if you have a point of view about the technology you see, especially as all this technology converges, blog, create a podcast, get your ideas out there. And everything is changing so much right now that we're all going to have different opinions. Let's have a really constructive conversation about it. And maybe from that's where the stories will spring.
I would say for those vendors out there, those vendor marketing teams, things like that, encourage your non-traditional marketeers to write and tweet and podcast. So some of the best things we've seen have come from people who wouldn't necessarily think they're part of a marketing team. I try and encourage all the SEs and things like that I deal with on a day-to-day basis, either to use Twitter or to write something, just to get out there and tell the stories, because they're the people who often are closer to the customers. So they may be able to tell the customer story better than the marketing team.
Perfect. Okay. So Gina, as we wrap up, so where can people find you online?
I'm always on Twitter. So GMinx on Twitter. And I write for 24/7 IT Connection, which is a blog where there's several ladies. We all contribute to the blog posts with different points of technology view. And I also podcast with two of my old friends from Dell on Wide World of Tech. And we talk a lot about sports, but really not about European sports, sorry. About American sports.
Oh, that's just so sad. Not that I'm into sport in a big way, but you know, you'll have to come over to the UK and vary your sporting experience a little bit and talk about that. That'd be good.
We'll have to take Gina to the cricket.
My kids are half Bermudian, and it used to scare me to death when their uncles would teach them with the cricket balls. Really terrifying.
Okay, that was great. Thanks, Gina. So just remember, everybody, if you want to follow us online, it's storageunpacked.com. It's at storageunpacked on Twitter. And you can just search for Storage Unpacked on LinkedIn. And we'll catch you all next time. Thanks, Gina. Thanks, Martin.
Bye.
Cheers, Chris.